You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I want to welcome everybody to this wonderful Tuesday night in excellence here on FTR Radio. With me is the lovely Smoozy Q.
Oh, Smoozy Q.
Hello.
Smoozy, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Well, fantastic. Well, how you been since the last time we talked? Last time we talked, we had our September 11th show.
Well, yeah, we did. And it was, I thought it was a terrific show and very fitting for the anniversary of that occasion. And but it seems like it's been a lifetime ago. There's been so much that's happened since.
Oh, my goodness. The world is crazy. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, before we really get into this, I do want to talk about our guest tonight. Last week, I promised you guys Mia Love. Well, thanks to Mark Warner, who's not on the show tonight. But thanks to Mark Warner, and we're thankful he's not on the show. But anyway, thanks to Mark Warner, we have tonight Mia Love. She is on the show tonight.
Yeah.
I almost feel like, you know, like one of those late night talk show hosts. I feel like I need applause after that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And wolf whistles and stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. But ladies and gentlemen, we are not done with just Mia Love. No. We bring you the stellar political analysis from FTR and Daily Caller's own Matt Lewis. That's right. Stellar show. Seriously. Did I not just deliver that like I was like Conan O'Brien or Jay Leno or something?
You did.
I know.
Better watch out for their jobs.
Not really.
Josh is coming for him.
Not really. One can always hope, but I'm too conservative for Hollywood. Anyway, although if I could meet Conan O'Brien, I could probably die happy.
I'm sure I can arrange that.
big fan of Coco. Anyway, so we have a stellar show tonight, but like Susie said, a lot has happened just in a week. And you're right. It does seem like it's been an eternity since we've even been on because of everything that's happened. And, you know, I know, Susie, you agree with me. Our hearts and our thoughts and prayers go out to the loss of life in Libya of those who were ambushed, essentially, including our ambassador and the SEALs who were with them. You know, it's... I've struggled with this, you know. I've watched the reporting of it, and it's obviously been a lot to take in. You know, I am not buying for one moment that the actions in Libya, mind you, I can maybe in Egypt, but not in Libya, were the cause of a YouTube video that had been online for more than 2 months.
You mean Ambassador Rice didn't convince you yesterday?
No. No, she didn't. No, she didn't.
Especially coming right on the heels of the Libyan president saying, oh, no, this was planned.
Exactly. I mean, the Libyan president says, no, there were no protests outside of the consulate. None whatsoever. It was all because of a video.
It's horrible, disgusting, awful video. And we condemn the attacks, too.
It's right. I mean, okay, regardless of whether this is a complete and utter failure of the Obama administration's intelligence, you know, regardless of whether that is the case, the fact is that they can't continue on this line and try to sell the American people on the fact that a simple YouTube video is causing mass chaos over in the Middle East.
There's a perspective problem there, I believe.
At the very least. These people hate us. And what has been going on there has been going on for goodness long before President Obama, long before President Bush, long before President Clinton. These people hate us, and they hate what we stand for. And to say that, you know, a 15 to 20 minute YouTube video is causing mass chaos is a short-sighted approach to foreign policy.
It's short-sighted. It's naive if it's truly believed, but I don't believe for 1 second it's truly believed. And it's just, I don't know. It's dangerous, I think, actually, in the long run, because if you're going to chalk everything that's happening up to some obnoxious, silly little video, then you're missing the big picture.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? And we're going to talk to Matt about this a little bit later. We're going to be talking about how this plays out in the presidential race. And we get his perspective on Romney, we get his perspective on Obama, how these guys are handling it. So Matt offers some pretty interesting perspective that if you haven't been reading his column lately, which, you got a problem if you haven't been.
Right.
But if you haven't been,
You need to be reading Matt's column.
that's right. But you will find out what he's been writing in. You're either going to like it or you're going to be like, oh yeah, that really
Yeah.
kind of makes sense.
You may not agree with what he has to say, but I think it's worth reading.
That's right. Well, before we get on to that, coming up next is someone we've been really excited to get on the show. We've been working for weeks, and she's on our show next, people. She's on our show next. That is
She's a rock
Mia.
star.
She is a rock star. Mia Love, mayor of Saratoga Springs, Utah, congressional candidate, GOP rock star, up and comer. Love it. Live it. Mia Love coming up next. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. Something moving, feeling new. It is real quiet, muddy water.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Man, Susie and I are pleased to have our next guest. She is, excuse me, the mayor of Saratoga Springs, Utah. She was running in Utah's 4th congressional district. But we all got basically introduced to her at the GOP convention when she gave easily one of the greatest speeches, probably at the convention. We have Mia Love. Mayor Love, thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you. That was nice of you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I think, honestly, maybe those of us who are actively involved have heard of you, and we knew that you were running, and we were like, oh, hey, we got this rock star out in Utah, but we really don't know about her. And I attended my first convention there in Tampa, and I watched your speech, and I was transfixed, honestly. I mean,
oh, thank you.
I think you really got a lot of people's attention, and it was obvious in the way that your speech was covered in the media, with words like rock star, up and coming, and just yeah. I mean, I don't mean to gush or anything, but I mean seriously, it was an incredible speech. And so what has life been like for you since Tampa?
Well, I was able to go out and represent the state that I know and love and live in, and talk about the America I know. And I think when you talk about, when you tell people the truth and you tell people about things that they know are just the truth of who we are and where we come from and where we're going, I think it resonates. And I was there first and foremost as a wife, a mother, a concerned citizen. And I just wanted to talk about where we've been, who we are as Americans, and always being able to stand up to challenges and how we do not have to go in the direction that we're going, that there is still hope, and all of that hope lies in freedom. So that's what I wanted to talk about, and I really hope that this message resonated to people, because it's time for all of us to get involved and get our country back in shape.
Well, I think it obviously connected with a lot of people, at least at the convention. Have you seen a bounce there in your district? Are people more aware of you than they were before? Well, you're mayor, so I'm sure that they know who you are.
Well, the name recognition definitely has gone up. A lot of people are really concerned here. We're tightening our belts. We're living within our means. The Utah that I know works really hard and finds solutions to problems. And so everyone was tuned in to the convention, and we were able to go out and represent Utah. And I think the most part, Utah was really they were pleased, and I hope, I really hope I made them proud, and I hope that we can really make a difference in this country.
Mia, one of the things I noticed, I also was transfixed by your speech, and you mentioned that you were there kind of as a wife, as a mother, and as a citizen, and as a mother myself, I know how busy it can be to have a busy schedule and be running a household. And I noticed at the introductory video, they showed that you're a runner and a trainer as well. How do you find time to fit everything into your schedule?
Well, you have to prioritize, and you have to have incredibly wonderful husband like I have. He feels, you know, that he's doing his part to do what he can to save this country also. And if that means, you know, loaning out his wife and making sure that, you know, his wife can get out and get to the American people and plead with everyone to make some changes with the direction that we're going, changes in the presidency, changes in representatives who are going to fight for conservative values and those values that have made us the greatest country, then he feels like he's doing his part. So, you know, it's just he's been such a great supporter, and I could not do this without him.
Well, I know that with working with candidates and working with members of Congress, having a supportive spouse is vitally important to even having a successful campaign.
Even the kids are absolutely wonderful. You know, I always have to do this gut check as to, you know, where I'm going. Is this really worth it? And my daughter who's going to junior high, I told her on the first day of school, I said, you know, just, I'm proud of you. I love you. I'm proud of everything that you've done. And she looks at me and she said, no, Mom, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of what you're doing. Uh-huh. And gosh, I mean, she just got me. I just thought, wow, I must have done something right in raising kids who understand the importance of this, of what we're doing here.
Well, Mia, what inspired you to get involved in politics? It's a dirty sport. And to have someone with the guts to get involved, I mean, that says something for one's character. What inspired
you? Well, I can tell you, it certainly wasn't what I wanted to do when I grow up. You know, I was really involved. It just happened. It just happened, you know. I was really involved in my community after leaving the workforce. I was working for the marketing department for a software company. And I just got, after I had my children, I really was involved in the community. I felt it was important for my kids to know that the world doesn't revolve around them, that, you know, they needed to give back. And I made a promise to my father that I wouldn't be a burden to society, that I would give back whenever I could. And so when the community came out and asked me to run for city council, there were a couple of seats that were open on the city council. I kind of, you know, I thought about it, and we thought that we should do that. And in that process, being on the city council in 2008, we had just a major housing market crash, big shortfall in the budget, and we had to work really hard. We rolled up our sleeves. We cut spending. We made sure that our property tax paid for nothing but public safety. And with all of that hard work, I was elected 60% as mayor. After that, then because we hold the highest bond rating available now, and we're on firm financial standing, and our city is doing really well. As a matter of fact, Standard & Poor's released a statement saying we had no choice but to give Saratoga Springs the highest bond rating available because their future was so bright. And all of that was happening while Washington was failing.
That's one of the things I noticed in doing a little bit of research is the growth that your town has experienced in recent years. And obviously you've faced financial difficulties, but seem to have found a way to cut the spending and find some success for it. Tell us a little bit about the changes that you felt were important to implement as far as getting the fiscal house under control there.
Well, you know, it isn't rocket science. A lot of what you have to do is stay out of the way. You know, I have to ask myself three questions. Is it affordable? Is it sustainable? Is it my job? And if it doesn't fit in that criteria, I shouldn't be making any new commitments. And so, you know, you think about things that way. You know, Washington, can you imagine if everyone in Washington thought that way, we would be in so much, we'd be in such better shape than we are right now. And so, you know, those are the things that you do. You remove regulation, you remove the different things that stifle businesses from coming into your community. You start getting out of the way, getting out of people's backyards and allowing them to make decisions and reaping the benefits of those or suffering the consequences. And I would say that our city has fared pretty well in this economy, but there's only so much we can do on the local level, you know, because Washington's policies are really starting to affect all of us.
You're absolutely right, Mia. And if you are elected to Congress, I mean, you originally talked about, you know, not wanting to be a burden to society, but we have a national debt that is over $16 trillion that is going to be a burden not just on us currently, but our children and our children's children. And God forbid it goes even further than that, but unless Washington changes its ways, that's what's going to happen. What needs to happen in Washington to start reeling back all of this spending?
We need to start leading. We need new leaders. We need people who are going to roll up their sleeves and at least come up with a plan. Because if you come up with a plan and say, this is where we need to cut, these are the things that we need to do, let's start tightening our belts and living within our means, then you can start taking pieces from plans and starting to form something that works. But, you know, a lot of people talk about compromise and gridlock. In order to even have gridlock, you have to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just because somebody comes up with a plan, you say, oh, I'm sorry, that's not going to work because you're on one end of the spectrum and I'm supposed to have an allegiance to another. So, you know, I respect Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney because that team at least has a plan. They're talking about 12 million more jobs from the private sector, affordable education, energy independence. These are things that are important. Championing, being a champion for small businesses. These are the things that are important. They're talking about the issues that are not divisive. Then you've got a president, our current president, that everything that he wants to talk about is dividing us. We're going to talk about how one income level is doing better than another, and we're going to talk about gender and the so-called war on women. I want him to know that these issues are American issues. We all face these issues. They're not prejudice. You know, we're all going to owe our portion of the debt. We're all feeling the burdens of unemployment. We're all feeling it when we go to the gas pump or when we go into the grocery store. These are the things that we need to talk about. We need to talk about the issues that are going to put our country back on its feet.
Absolutely. Mia, could you tell us a little bit about your congressional district? You're running against an incumbent Democrat who...
This is a new seat, and so he's actually left his district to run into this district, so he doesn't even live in this district. He's got about $2 million of outside liberal attack ads against me, and so we're doing really well. We're working really hard. But we've got to raise funds so that we can respond to these ads. Again, we need as much help as possible, and so I'm asking as many people as we possibly can to go to the website loveforutah.com and donate so that we make sure that the liberals cannot buy this beat. We make sure we put the truth out there and we let people know exactly what we're going to do. We need leaders that are going to provide real solutions to real problems.
You know, you mentioned the attack ads that your opponent is airing against you, and I know that there was, I'm sure, your speech at the convention got some recognition, not only on the right, but also on the left. Have you had much, encountered much backlash from your speech from people on the left?
Oh, yeah. I pose a little bit of a problem to Obama and the liberal agenda.
That's definitely not a bad thing, Mia.
They came out and they just said the nastiest things, hacked my Wikipedia ad and just did the nastiest things. But, you know, again, these are things that we're going to stand up and we're going to say we are not going to stand up. We're going to stand up against this behavior. We're not going to allow this type of behavior.
Good.
You know, am I surprised at it? No, am I disappointed? Always disappointed. But again, we've got a president that's going out and it's dividing us as Americans. And these are the things that are coming straight from his leadership. So you know, we've got some tough challenges ahead. I believe that we are on the brink of changing just the face of this country and what we believe in, and that's hard work and struggle and freedom. The freedom to choose, the freedom to fail, the freedom to reap the benefits or suffer the consequences. We're losing all of the things that have made us great, and we're going to have to stand up and make sure we fight harder than we ever have to preserve that.
Mia, kind of on following up on that, also from your convention video, I loved your definition of freedom. You said it was agency. Could you go into a little bit more into that? Because obviously convention videos are fairly short, so you only get to say a few things of what you think. But I liked where you were going with that. I was wondering if you might be able to expand a bit on your view of freedom.
Well, freedom is like I said, agency. It's your ability to choose, your ability to make choices for yourself. I was a little disheartened when I listened to the president's speech. He talked about what makes this country great was hope. The road was long. It was going to be hope, and that the old America is not going to work for us anymore, and we need a makeover. Well, what I wanted to rush through the screen and say, no, what makes this country great is freedom. Freedom is what allows people to give more than they've ever given before, not a federal mandate. Freedom is what allows so many people to come from whatever country they came from to come here, a land of opportunity and a land of freedom. And when a young man or a young woman puts on that uniform and goes and fights for fights and sacrifices their life, they're sacrificing their lives for freedom. That's what makes this country great. And so these are the things, I mean, innovators and entrepreneurs of today, they put so much of their time and effort in the ability, the freedom to be able to say, you know, this is a crazy idea, but only in this country, this might work.
Mia, again, you've been incredible. I encourage everyone to go to loveforutah.com, help donate to her campaign. Check if you haven't seen her convention speech, you can check it out there. And check out her introductory video. Follow her on Twitter, @MiaBLove, and find out more about her on Facebook as well. Mia, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. Again, I know it's insanity for you right now.
It is, and I just wanted to let people know, if they donate, you know, it's definitely making a difference. From convention, where we were able to get a little bit of a boost with donations, we really saw an 8-point change in this election. So if we can stay on TV, we will win this seat. We just need to make sure we're combating the $2 million that's coming up against us. So I want people to know that every penny that they donate is really making a difference.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's help get Mia Love to Congress. Loveforutah.com. Mia, thanks again for being on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
Well, we couldn't do it without people like you, that's for sure.
That's right.
All right.
Or you'd be having a whole lot of arguments.
Hey, that's okay. You know, free speech. We're all about
it. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome. You're listening to FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. She came down
to heal me. All right, you people on the left and right coasts, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow @HoosierAccess on Twitter and HoosierAccess on Facebook, and subscribe to this show and podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With us this segment is from the Daily Caller. We have Matt Lewis. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Well, it's been a long time since we've had you on this show, But with everything that's been going on since Romney won the primary outright, and everything that's gone on, well, basically, we could say the last week.
Yeah. seems like an eternity.
even since the convention, it seems like it's been an eternity.
It's crazy. And I think some of it has to do with them. You know, the media environment now. Like a story that broke this morning at 9 a.m. is old news. Mm-hmm. So I think we're just packing so much more meta news into each day.
Oh, my goodness. We are. And actually, before we even came on the segment, I was talking with Susie off the air, and she was talking about, she's like, hey, did you see that article on Mother Jones? I said, What article on Mother Jones? And she's like, well, apparently Mitt Romney hates 47% of Americans.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of old news now because it's been like 3 or 4 hours since it's been out, and so we're past that now. We're on to something else.
We are, and it is just this ongoing cycle of just the campaign race in general. And I wanted to bring you on just to kind of last time we had you on, we were talking about well still the primaries. We were talking about the Rick Perrys and the Newt Gingriches and the Rick Santorums. So obviously, it's been a while. We have Mitt and Santorum and Gingrich. They made token appearances at the convention. And just a side note, if Newt and Callista's speech was not one of the most awkward things we've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bizarre. And they were reading. And it's so weird because Newt Gingrich is one of the, one of the better communicators out there. And for he and Callista, well, I think part of the problem is having Callista on stage. Don't get me wrong, I like Callista, mm-hmm. and she's quite nice, but I think it would have been better for Newt to just talk about Reagan. And that's the other thing. Ostensibly, it was supposed to be part of a tribute to Reagan, and he really used it as an opportunity to go negative on Obama, and I just thought that was a little bit odd as well.
Though not necessarily, too off track for Newt with the way that he campaigned. I mean, he kind of had this, negative, punchy feel. And so he seemed to kind of want to make a, do what he could.
It was somewhat the convention, and I know that it's several weeks removed now, but I mean, to me, the Romney, the Republican convention was a combination of like really good moments that really were inspiring. Mm-hmm. And then the buzz was always killed by something that followed it that was really like discordant. Uh-huh. And it's almost like, this is a crude analogy, but there's an episode of How I Met Your Mother where Barney Stinson, the womanizer, mm-hmm. He meets these women at bars, and then he has like a long commute to his home, and they always sober up before he gets home. That's kind of how the convention was. He would have us, sort of seduced, and then they would do something to mess it up and sort of shake us from our reverie.
Yeah. Well, I know what you're talking about because I really enjoyed, the Rubio and Romney speeches. But it seemed obviously like what stole that evening wasn't our candidate. It was Clint Eastwood in the chair.
Right. So, and that's the thing where my conservative friends want to talk about how great that was and the media got it wrong and regular people. No, it was weird. It was weird.
So
we have to admit it. And it wasn't good. I don't know that it was the disaster that some people think it was, but it was not ideal. That is for sure.
I'll give you that. I took some strange enjoyment out of it, watching it. I mean, where I was seated, I was actually up near the rafters. I was kind of face to face with the balloons before they dropped, and you couldn't hear them too well. And I know that was he didn't do a mic check. This was all off the cuff. But what and there were a couple of lines where I was like, ooh.
But see, I would argue that by virtue of being in the room, you actually are the least prepared to do an analysis. Because because the vast majority of people who saw it on TV.
Uh-huh,
and I think that if you're in the room, you could potentially get kind of caught up in the energy and the excitement.
True. I wasn't all that disappointed with it. I thought there were, like I said, cringeworthy moments, but I was, you know, I saw the reaction on Twitter and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, good to have finally have some good quality discussion on the convention here on the show.
Yeah. Maybe we can come back in January and talk about the November election.
Yeah.
Well, actually, by that time, we'll be ready to talk about the DNC convention.
Yeah.
No, so, okay, we've moved on past the convention. There wasn't any discernible bounce. I don't think he lost anything, but there wasn't any bounce. And I think a lot of that could do with the fact that there was also the DNC was right after it, you know.
Yeah.
There really was no time for a bounce. But it seems as if with everything that's kind of gone on since then, you know, the economic numbers came out, jobs, the numbers, unemployment went down, but not by enough. And that's only because certain numbers weren't reported. So the economic report didn't necessarily do Obama any good. It didn't necessarily do him that much harm. But we've kind of, since September 11th, we've had the situation in the Middle East.
Right.
And when it seems like there was an opportunity for maybe the Romney campaign to jump on a situation, they did, but probably not in the best of ways.
Well, I think jump on the situation is actually kind of part of the problem. I think that first of all, I've always disagreed with the notion that the election should be just about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me that no matter if times are tough, Democrats can always outpromise Republicans.
That's true, because we kind of feel like holding up our end of the bargain, usually.
Right.
Usually.
And so the idea that times being tough, Romney could make it all about the economy sounded good and it sounded plausible. But I never really bought into that. And I think even if you look to Reagan in 1980, yes, there was malaise and yes, you know, stagflation and the economy was horrible. But it was part of a larger message. America was, you know, there were hostages taken in Iran and America's reputation around the world was very bad. And some of it had to do with the economy, but it kind of transcended the economy. It was a part of a larger message. And I feel like Romney needs to make that larger message. I think, though, that that it was badly mishandled. My sense is that he should have, in hindsight, it's 2020, but my sense is that he should have issued a brief statement condemning the violence and standing shoulder to shoulder with President Obama during this difficult time. I think that other people, other conservative opinion leaders, and maybe even mainstream media types would have started to look into Obama's, you know, security failures and you know, why wasn't the consulate and the ambassador, you know, guarded? Did this movie really spawn this? And I feel like Romney inadvertently drew attention to himself and gave reporters an excuse to write a horse race story and to focus on domestic politics and not to talk about the bigger issue. And so I think that was definitely a mistake on his part.
It seems as if the Romney campaign, and I don't want to pick on the Romney campaign, but it does seem as if they have, every time they've made one good, solid step forward, they do something to take a really awkward step back.
Right, and it goes back to my, this goes to my Barney Stinson buzzkill theory.
Yeah, which I think is very apt, honestly. Mm-hmm. Apt.
There's something there, and I think the other thing that I've noticed is, now this Middle East press conference is an example of, I think, him sort of being over aggressive in a sense to prove to his base who had become disenchanted that he's running an aggressive campaign. But by and large, it seems to me the race has been the Romney campaign will start to be exciting and sort of take chances and do interesting things, and they start winning, and then they always revert back to this passive, we can win by just keeping our head down. You know, this election is a referendum on Obama, and we're going to win just because the economy's bad. And then it goes south, and they have to do something interesting and exciting again, like pick Paul Ryan, for example. Mm-hmm. And it works, and there's excitement, and there's energy. And then instead of keeping their foot on the gas, they revert back into passivity. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the decision to go forward with this press conference was a result of them being sort of over-aggressive, probably because they had been under-aggressive previously.
Matt, how much – we were talking about this earlier, about the basically the 24/7 news cycle and the intensity of it and the fast pace of it. How much of that do you think is a factor in this sort of faltering forward campaign issue? And I mean, you know, I think some of what you're saying could actually be applied to the Democrats as well. It just seems like there's so much more scrutiny on a minute by minute basis. You catch every misstep.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I wouldn't want to go back to the days when there was a liberal bias and a mainstream media monopoly. I mean,
right.
You know, in the old days, you had, you know, NBC, ABC, CBS, NPR, New York Times, Washington Post. And, you know, I think this is the I think this is the 8-year anniversary today of the Rathergate story breaking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where bloggers and, you know, Drudge sort of caught Dan Rather peddling those bogus Air Force documents.
Yep, the beginning of the end for Dan.
Exactly. So, you know, it's easy to sort of hearken back and lionize the halcyon days of, you know, the old days, but in fact, they weren't that good. You know, conservatives now have Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and the Drudge Report. Having said that, I do think that the new media dynamic changes things, and I think there are a couple things about it. First, I think that it's easier to have a feeding frenzy, so that once something bad comes out, it's sort of sped up, and it's harder to regain control of the narrative. And I think Romney is at a disadvantage for a couple reasons, but one of the reasons is that I think when you're the president, it's harder to get to you because of security. So, for example, you remember 4 years ago, Huffington Post taped candidate Obama talking about bitter gun clingers, clinging to God and guns. Mm-hmm. Well, that wouldn't happen now. I think it would be harder to infiltrate with a recorder to infiltrate an Obama fundraiser. But I think it's easier to sort of catch Romney on the stump. So I wouldn't say that things are better things may be better now. I wouldn't say that they're worse because of the new media model, but they're definitely different, and they're definitely different challenges. And
well, it's as if the messaging has to adapt to knowing that there is a constantly fluid narrative. And I was watching the news today, had the station predominantly on Fox News during the time of day when I can actually stand it. And honestly, that's before the personalities get on.
Yeah, that's so, me too. I like Special Report.
Oh, Brett Baer is fantastic. Yeah, I think he's very objective.
I wish that cable news were more like that.
Mm-hmm.
That there were more shows that were, you know, like the Special Report model. That's my favorite part of cable news.
I would agree. But the one thing that I was hearing a lot, and I don't think that this is necessarily because they're taking their cues from any particular, you know, social conservative voice, or conservative voice in general, not necessarily social conservative, but from a conservative voice, but they seem to be talking a lot about the narrative, especially in terms of how the media, which I found ironic that Fox News was talking about the media.
right.
But they were talking about how The narrative has become that Romney has been this big blunder, especially at coming out of his press conference last week, and that all the emphasis in the apparently the apparent intelligence failure, because it was reported today that there was no that there were no protests going on outside the consulate, that there was that, you know, there's long been this debate since the attack last week that, you know, was it because of the YouTube video, or was it because, you know, this was a planned attack, and it's sounding like this was a planned attack. But there seems to be no focus on Obama and the intelligence failure. You know, the fact that he skipped his intelligence briefing to go to a fundraiser in Las Vegas. They just seem to be focusing on, you know, Romney's blunder and that kind of narrative. But again, to your point, the narrative is so fluid. I mean, our campaigns, they just have to adapt. Do they need to have more communications people? Are you know, people just getting burnout? Or are they just, well, are they not adapting? I mean, what are you seeing here?
First of all, I think we do have to concede it's incredibly difficult and incredibly challenging. And I do think the media is biased. And some of the bias, I think, is ideological. And then some of it, I just think, is it's a bias toward, like, what sells. And I think that Romney is more interesting right now to talk about. I mean, Obama's been president for 4 years. For whatever reason, this is what gets attention right now. So, you know, I do concede it's a difficult business to be in. I think that some of the problems Romney brought on himself, I think he's by holding that press conference, I think he stepped on the narrative. I think that Romney is not a great candidate, you know, just from, I think that conservatives, he's had a hard time even keeping conservatives on his side. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember, it seems like an eternity ago, but a week ago he went on Meet the Press and was like, oh yeah, we'll keep some of Obamacare. We don't have to won't get rid of everything. I mean, when he does that, he's not a great candidate. I think he's got a lot of aides who sort of rub people the wrong way. A lot of them are kind of like Boston types, which I don't think appeal to a lot of Americans, certainly not a lot of conservatives. Stu Stevens, I think is from Mississippi, but he essentially is a Hollywood guy. I don't know if you saw the Politico story.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to be asking you what you thought of, at least, and you may not be alluding to this, but the Politico story saying that there's dissension within the Romney ranks.
Yeah, I think what I would do, just to tie it all together, I would say that the problem, I think, is that once a narrative spins out of control, this is like a car that has slid on ice, and they're hydroplaning now. He's trying to regain control. And that's what's so dangerous about this new media environment, is that once you lose control, it's very hard to regain it. And I think that it's entirely possible that Romney will still... I think that some of the stuff with the Stu Stevens thing, the infighting, it happens in every campaign.
Yeah.
But winning campaigns, losing campaigns. But I think that because there's a sense that they're losing, that some people start leaking. And, you know, losing leads to bad things. It's self-perpetuating. And nothing succeeds like success. And Romney needs to regain control of that car. Then he can start getting some good momentum. He can still win this thing, but it's like a football team on a losing streak. You know, they've got to get that first down, and then they can get that first win before they can get the second win. And they've just got to turn the narrative around. It's so difficult once it's spinning out of control.
Matt, you were mentioning the football analogy, and I reading your piece from the other day, you mentioned the Redskins. I was going to ask if you felt like maybe they ran into that same problem yesterday against the Rams.
Tough game. Tough game.
I was at the game, so that's why I'm asking.
I never in my life thought that the abbreviations RG3 and QE3 would both be part of my lexicon, that I'd be using them both on a daily basis. What are the odds? No, it was a very tough game. And actually, I think the Redskins, the analogy with the Redskins yesterday, they're more like Obama. They mm-hmm. should have won, and they thought they were going to win, and they got cocky, and they let the Rams hang around. And I think that that Romney could be like the Rams. That
I'd like to see
that everybody thinks they're going to lose, but they just hang around and they win at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of to that, I mean, a lot of people want to make comparisons to 1980. And with all that is going on in this election, and frankly in the world, it's hard to ignore. I mean, in a sense that, I mean, could history be repeating itself here? I mean, Carter had the edge going into the final weeks of the campaign. They had, you know, like you said before, America's standing in the world wasn't great. There was turmoil in Iran. Gas prices were high. Unemployment was high. I mean, could the Romney camp, I mean, take any cues from what Reagan did with his campaign? Of course, a lot of people said he probably actually didn't win it until the final debate, which was the weekend before the election. But, I mean, are there any cues to be taken here from how Reagan ran in 80?
Well, I think probably dangerous to draw too close of an analogy. I knew Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan was a good friend of mine. Mitt Romney didn't know Ronald Reagan. I think the other problem, honestly, is that now America has been through a tough decade. There's no doubt about it. We had 9/11 and Iraq and Afghanistan, but I feel like most of the I think we've underestimated how badly George W. Bush destroyed the Republican brand. And I think by 1979, it was a different scenario. You'd been through, you know, the Kennedy assassination, MLK, RFK assassination, Vietnam, Watergate. I feel like America had really given up on Carter, and we're ready to try something, to take a chance on this guy named Reagan. And I don't think the analogy is the same. I just don't. Doesn't mean Romney can't win.
Yeah.
But I don't, I think it's dangerous to, you know, we're always trying to find this race is just like that race. And I think this is unique. I think that
Well, I don't want to give the impression that I think the race is like that race. I think there's some odd, you know, outlier similarities, things that are outside of at least Romney's control and to a certain extent President Obama's control.
Right, and I mean the fact that I think this was the first ambassador killed since 1979.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Since Carter
is a bit uncanny. So yeah, I mean it's not an absurd comparison.
A stretch. It's a stretch. I know that. And I mean, I've personally, you know, I've given up and I've grown tired of all the talk of finding the next Reagan. I mean, one, we'll never find him. He was one guy. All right. We need to find our next leader. And whether that's right. Mitt Romney or whether that's someone else, and as you've noted in one of your posts earlier this week, that you know it may not be Romney, but it may be our deep bench,
yeah.
Which is one thing that we talked about in our show a week or two ago. Where the one thing that I got out of the convention was just how insanely deep the GOP bench is.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Whether it's Mike Pence or Marco Rubio or Bobby Jindal or Rand Paul or Susana Martinez or Nikki Haley or Brian Sandoval. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Ted Cruz just got elected in Texas. You know, there's a lot of talent out there. And it is weird because I feel like, and this is, you know, incredibly controversial, on the right, right now because, you know, they're trying to win this election. And but if Mitt Romney manages to win this election and then basically governs like George W. Bush and doesn't get rid of Obamacare, doesn't extirpate it, but kind of keeps the good stuff and makes part of the Republican brand, or just muddy the waters. And just think, it's possible that in 2016, we could, you know, basically have cleaned out all the Bush underbrush that's left over and have a Marco Rubio, young conservative Hispanic presidency in a new era. Or we could have Mitt Romney, the guy who gave us RomneyCare.
I know.
For the next 8 years. And that would muddying the Republican brand and preventing. I mean, I'm not making the argument for Obama, but I think it's more complex than most people think.
No, it is definitely complex. These are things that have kind of crossed my mind as well. That said, I really want Obama gone. So, hey, real quick, one last question for you, and you brought it to my mind when you made your little JFK or no, your Lloyd Benson Reagan kind of thing there. but I read some, I forget where I read it. I'm not going to try to think about it because we're running out of time. But it totally made sense, and this is about Bill Clinton's speech at the DNC.
Well, I thought it. I mean, I will say I thought his speech was very good.
It was entertaining. But did you not get out of it that was Bill Clinton saying, Barack Obama, I know Bill Clinton, and frankly, you're not me.
I thought that it was an incredibly effective and helpful speech for Barack Obama. I think that he. It's funny because Obama ran on the "Yes, we can" slogan. And Bill Clinton changed that to nobody could, no president could have. Mm-hmm. Which, when you compare the two sides aside, it's an admission of failure. But I think that it worked. I think that the public, when they hear Bill Clinton, who has a 67% approval rating and is a former president, say in that very compelling way that he has, that take my word for it, no president could have fixed it. I think that it was compelling and people believed it. And I think that it was much more sort of intellectual than a lot of speeches. The politicians have bought this notion that if you're explaining, you're losing, and that the public isn't terribly sophisticated. And most of the times, I think that's true. That, you know, what is it, the line, nobody ever lost a dime by underestimating the American intelligence or something like that, was it P.T. Barnum? But I think Clinton had a sort of a deep conversation, and I think it worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, we've kind of come to the close here of our segment, but outside of your fine writings there at the Daily Caller, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, I'm glad you asked. On Twitter, at Matt K. Lewis. But I also, if people listen to this podcast, they should check out my podcast, The Matt Lewis Show.
Absolutely.
You can get it on iTunes. So it's a lot of fun.
Not only that, you can hear Matt on iTunes. You can get it, download it, like, you know, kind of right away. But it also airs here on FTR Radio.
Yes, part of the FTR family.
Oh,
yes.
Matt, we love that you're part of the FTR family. So anyway, yes, check out Matt's podcast. You can download him on iTunes and catch him at dailycaller.com/Matt Lewis, and as well as on the Twitter. Matt, thanks again for being on the show this week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And you're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. Meet me when I say you'll be last to know. Liar's schemes and sword machines will hang me from my rope. I'm tired of running from what I was into, what I've become.
My dad used to tell us, en este país, ustedes van a poder lograr todas las cosas que nosotros no pudimos. In this country, you're going to be able to accomplish all the things we never could.
few years ago, during a speech, I noticed a bartender behind a portable bar in the back of the ballroom. And I remembered my father, who worked for many years as a banquet bartender. He was grateful for the work he had, but that's not the life he wanted for us. You see, he stood behind a bar in the back of the room all those years, so one day I could stand behind a podium in the front of a room.
FTRradio.com. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight, folks. I want to thank our guest, congressional candidate Mia Love, and columnist for the Daily Caller, Matt Lewis. Smoozy!
Yes.
Did you enjoy tonight?
I did.
Good show. Good show. Hey, where can people find you on the internets?
They can find me at SmoozyQ on Twitter, SmoozyQ, and at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitters, as well as joshgillespie.com, where you can find the complete archive of Gillespie. So, for the SmoozyQ, I'm Josh Gillespie. Coming up next, we have the Snark Factors with Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor Players. You've been listening to Gillespie. Thanks for tuning in this week. We'll be back next week. So long.
Speak like you used to. Where do we go to now that our comfort is gone? Pick up the receiver, 'cause I wanna hear you laugh.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?